Welcome to the Martial Arts Lifestyle Podcast, where we talk with martial arts practitioners about their histories and the influence that their practice of martial arts has on their lives. You are listening to the free version of this podcast, which is abbreviated. Help support this program by considering to subscribe to us on Patreon, where you will get 4 full-length podcasts each month, 1 week before the YouTube release date. The cost is that of about 1 coffee shop coffee per month. Go to www.patreon.com/malmag to subscribe. That is www.patreon.com/malmag. If you would like to purchase single full-length episodes of the Martial Arts Lifestyle Podcast, visit our Gumroad page at malmag.gumroad.com, and that is malmag.gumroad.com. This week I sit down in Venice and I have a conversation with Nick Hahn. Nick's got an interesting background, being from California and moving to Atlanta, where he currently trains and works for Sifu Francis Fong. Good story. Sit back and enjoy. Arts Lifestyle Podcast, and I am now sitting in somewhere in Los Angeles on the west side between Venice. No, we'll call it Venice. Close enough, Venice. I just had lunch with my next guest and kind of sitting out at a park for a conversation because it's a beautiful day. This particular person I met, when did we meet? 10 years ago?
Something like that, yeah.
Okay, so like 10 years ago, Sealock Camp, right?
Exactly, Sealock Camp.
Okay. So Nick Hahn is here, and Nick's another guy that actually I have to look up to, literally. One of those few people I train with that are actually, you know, my height, which is kind of cool. I must be my tall guy run with Chris Harley in the middle. We just talked with Miguel DaCosta about, well, it'll be 2 episodes ago, so a couple weeks ago when people are hearing this, and he's also a person standing about our height. So
yeah, the first time I worked with you at Sealock Camp, that was, your eyes lit up and you went, oh, an underhook. All I don't right. get underhooks.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I'm like, wow, I get to practice something I don't normally get to do because of the height issue. Yeah, it's like I always overhook, but, you know, it's nice to when you're big, because you do have to, I mean, you can't, Grudan talks about it, and it's, you know, I think a lot of instructors talk about it, you can use the attribute of size and strength to make up for mistakes in form, potentially, but that also means that we have to be very careful not to be doing that a lot.
Yeah.
Because then you end up not really learning good form.
Yeah, and I find for myself also, especially, and I know you work with younger students as well, and you have you know, the kids class going on, smaller framed adults, and I do find it's almost sometimes goes the other way. It's like I'll be too gentle doing something, and then someone like, no, you really get in there, take that line, make that move work. It's like, oh, right. I'm so used to
not breaking somebody.
I used to say, it's like, you know, you can be big and you can be tough, or it's like you can be big or you can be tough, but if you're both, it's hard to find training partners.
Right. Indeed. So yeah. But, you know, it's kind of, it's good to be that big guy that can actually work with smaller people, because then you get used as a good example lot for that particular thing. Because, you know, I think Chris Harley and I last week we talked about a lot of stuff, and we touched a little bit on the value of the training partner. And I don't think we ever got into it as deep as we wanted to, which I think is going to come back in a future episode with him, but, you know, it's something we can talk about a little bit as well, especially considering that we are these rather big individuals. And you want to have a value as a training partner, not only for us as someone who doesn't, you don't want people to be fearful of you injuring them. And at the same time, especially when they're smaller, you're like, you need to be able to do this to me to make sure you can actually do this.
Yeah. And it's such a, it's empowering for them in a way, because we're the proof of concept. Hey, right. If your body leverage is correct, even though I'm a foot taller than you, you will move me. You will take my base and I will be on this floor. And sure enough, they do it. And it's like, oh, wow, I can do this. Like, yeah. you see their eyes light up. So, yeah, I definitely think the being a, a valuable tool in that regard, that proof of concept. But then also, if you need to give someone a reality check, if you know, if, hey, yes. hey, I only ever work with my best friend. We came up together in the kids class and we're both 5'5" and, you know, really wired. It's okay, neat. Now I'm going to grab you and hold you down. Right. What are you going to do about this situation? Oh, I haven't trained against a guy this big in a while. And,
Well, I try that leg sweep, but it feels like I'm kicking a wall.
Yeah.
You are. That's exactly what you're doing. Well, gosh, Nick, you are an interesting person who pulled one of those switches on me that was really funny, and that was a geographical switch.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I first met you, you were working with a group in, like, north, well, not far north California, but north of us, so, like, you know, the same latitude as, like, the Bay Area, which is...
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, and then and all of a sudden you're showing up with this Atlanta group, and I'm like, wait a minute, aren't you... Were you, and he gave me that long enough pause to where, you know, just let me thought I was crazy for long enough. And he went, no, I moved to Atlanta. So you're currently out of Atlanta.
Yes. Yeah, so my my original start was at the Tandes Academy of Martial Arts.
It's in, and that was your first school that you
My first oh, my wow. first school in Mountain View. So for me, I am really good as far as having discipline, let's go exercise, let's do this, let's do that, when there's something on the line. So when I was wrestling, you know, hey, let's get in there, let's practice 5 times a day, let's do extra drills, let's, you know, do stair runs, let's do this, let's do that. I could do that, no problem. I wrestled through high school and college. And then as soon as I got out and there wasn't that, hey, you got to train and be good because, you know, we have a competition coming, immediately just all of my discipline to work out, to be healthy, just eroded. And it was one of those things where I was becoming more and more unhealthy.
Dude, you're a freak. No one ever has that problem.
I know. Yeah. I know. I'm so unique. And what ultimately happened was I kept, you know, I'd go to gyms and it just didn't ever put any time into it and all fell apart. And then at some point I was like, you know, I'm a quarter Filipino. I've always wanted to study, you know, Filipino martial arts.
Okay, this dude's like 6'6", so his quarter Filipino, the quarter of him that's Filipino is actually like a full-size Filipino.
Yeah. I'll say I'm full Filipino from now on. I like that. But yeah.
Well, you're about 3 Filipinos, actually.
Yeah. So, but yeah, so I found this school, and I'd never heard of CLOT before. You know, I knew who Bruce Lee was, but I was like, oh, you know, JKD, that's a neat thing out there. And I immediately fell in love. I mean, I took 2 classes there, immediately signed up for the Unlimited. I was there 5 days a week. I would take every class they had.
This was your first martial art. You'd done wrestling before.
Yes.
But you'd never done like a...
Yeah, I think I did Kaju Kempo when I was living in Hawaii.
Oh, okay.
But that was like, I think it was sub 1 year, just... kind of, you know, I'm a kid, I'm doing karate and all that, and it's crazy now looking back.
Well, so yeah, so your deep dive was as an adult, essentially.
Okay. Yeah, some of the Kaju Kempo guys, I'm like, dang, I want to go back and retouch those roots, because some of those guys look really good.
Yeah, that's a
pretty sharp.
That's a really cool art,
but
something I'm looking forward to exploring a little bit for the magazine articles, and then, you know, I'd love to get some practitioners. I think I know a few. And I'd certainly 1 degree of separation from some really good ones.
Yeah.
You know, chat with them a bit.
Yeah. Oh, but yeah. But, so anyway, so in the Tandis Academy, that was my first deep dive. And that was where I started not only, of course, training there, but it's like, oh, wow, you know, Stockton's not that far.
Right.
Goodwill teaches the seminar in Stockton. Hey, Nick, you love CLOT. There's a CLOT camp. It's amazing. Let's go do that. And that was the first time we met. And then also, as a total, you know, unique move that no one's ever done before, I was looking at the cost of living in California and went, huh, it's a little bit high. So maybe...
You're not wrong.
Maybe it's time to, you know, kind of check some other places out. And I traveled around a bunch, and basically I didn't want to start over because I did find that I had a strong love for these arts. I did want to keep training. I didn't want to start over. So I'm like, okay, what cool cities do I like? Let me see if there's an Inosanto affiliate. And kind of was doing that. And it was, I you know, some success, but I was like, you know, maybe I'm going backwards. I'm looking at cities I like and seeing if they have an instructor. What if I look for an instructor and then see what the city is like around them?
Right.
And then every year, and of course, there's the Train with the Legends, and it's like, mm-hmm. okay, well, you know, training with Gudo doesn't solve the cost of living in California. Kind of same thing, similar thing.
It's actually part of the cost of living, yeah. right? Yeah.
So similar thing for Ajahn, similar thing for Jean-Jacques. And all of a sudden, it's like, wait a second. Where does Sifu Francis Fong live? Oh, over there in Atlanta. How much does it cost to live there? Oh, 1/3 of what I'm looking at right now. Interesting. Wow. Okay, well, let's do that. That's when I pulled the switcheroo. Kind of didn't tell anyone about it. Kept coming to Sealot Camp like normal.
Well, you certainly didn't check with me.
So, yeah, that was the transition. That was the pivot.
And how long ago was that you did that?
I moved officially there in 2014.
Okay.
I'm coming up, not quite there yet, but I'm coming up on year 10 under Sifu Francis.
So what was the, lack of better words, culture shock, which is a funny term to use because we think of, you know, going to foreign countries and very different cultures, but, you know, it's the same idea. What was the culture shock of... like from going from, say, Northern California to Georgia, Atlanta, Georgia?
I did not experience much of one. But now that might be something that's unique to me. Mm-hmm. I tend to get along very well with everyone, mm-hmm. for the most part. But one thing also, my mom grew up in a very small town in Virginia. Okay. And... you know, her graduating class was, I think, just a handful of people in high school. I mean, just like a really kind of rural upbringing. So for her, she's like, wow, I've always felt like my world is kind of small. Her eye-opening experience was she joined the Air Force. That's actually where she met my father. They were actually married in Okinawa, Japan, on an Air Force base. Yeah. I was born in Bitburg Air Force Hospital in Germany.
Wow.
She didn't want that for me. When my parents got out of the Air Force and they were living in Hawaii, it was same but different. There's people on those islands that never want to leave. And hard to blame them. It's paradise. But at the same time, it's like there's this isolating feel and kind of a... I don't want to call it an ignorance. That sounds too harsh. But like just an unawareness of other cultures.
Right.
So my parents... kind of perpetually had me traveling as much as they could, and we would be out exploring. I would go to Disneyland, and one of the cool things about having family in either coast was we would hop back and forth. So I'd go from Hawaii to Virginia, stop in California on the way, go Virginia back to Hawaii, and you know, just see these kind of different cities, these different places. So I never really had that thought of like, oh wow, I'm so like, I'm away from home, how will I cope with this? I was always moving around. I was always exploring, and of course, you know, being that I'm used to rural Virginia, metropolitan Georgia's like, there was no culture shock as far as that goes for me. And especially, you know, when you're diving into obviously the very talented pool of martial artists that are over there, it's like you immediately have community and something to bond over.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and it probably helped, I guess, going to something like Sifu Francis' school from kind of already, obviously you'd already trained with him, you know, when you came to Legend. So you're familiar with him. You've already trained with him. And you probably knew a handful of his people, too, already.
So actually, no. It was a little more of a leap of faith than that. I had actually missed... So I was at the Tanez Academy for, I think, 1 year and 8 months.
Mm-hmm.
And just, again, was there all the time, and then made my move. But I actually missed Sifu Francis for Training with the Legends. I'd seen little clips of him. Obviously, I knew him by reputation, but I'd never actually met him. I hadn't met Kevin Lee down there either.
Oh, wow.
Or any of those guys. So I kind of walked into it blind, but just, you know, trusting that... these people have the reputation they do for a reason. And of course I was not disappointed. I mean, I was totally blown away.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, Well, I mean, I knew Sifu Francis by reputation long before, just because of, you know, some really good people at the Academy and how they talked about him. And, of course, Larry Hartzell, you know, respected him a great deal as well. So, I remember the first time I was going to, I don't know if it was Legends or a January seminar. It was probably Legends, given the time I think I signed up at the Academy. And it was just like, okay, this met and exceeded expectation.
Yeah. Actually, now that I'm remembering it, it was actually kind of interesting too, because I walked in, and Sifu wasn't there for a while. I was when I initially signed up, he was recovering from, I think, a rotator cuff surgery or something like that.
Oh, so my gosh, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. So there was a. Yeah, yeah. It was kind of this weird thing where I was at his school, but I hadn't met him yet. But it was like, it was fine, you know. Again, like, really talented people over there, really pleasant people, and I really enjoyed, you know, learning from them. And then it was kind of this moment where it's like, oh my gosh, Sifu's gonna be in tonight. I'm like, oh, I'm finally gonna get to meet him. And then it was awesome. I didn't fangirl too much, but a little bit. I'm like, yeah, it's Sifu. And but then, of course, when he starts to move, it's like, whoa, this is a different human.
Right.
So yeah, it set the standard for what I should be working towards.
Right. So where did the jump come? Because you work at the Academy there. That's that's your job. So where did the, okay, I'm moving to this city, and what was your intention as far as work when you were going? What did you, do you have a education or background in a particular thing that you were looking for?
No, I mean, I figured I'd just find a job, and just like a lot of us do, it's like, hey, this is the job that supports my hobby, and,
right,
and hooray. When I was at the Tanda's Academy, I actually did volunteer to help teach the kids classes.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was at the Francis Fong Academy, I noticed that, you know, hey, there's not, you know, not to say that the kids class was short staffed, but, you know,
yeah,
if you're running after 30 kids, as many people as you can get on the floor.
Kids class can use help no matter how many.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
So I was like, hey, you know, I helped teach the kids class back in California. If you guys ever need help, like, let me know.
Yeah.
And Kev said, well, you know, we have to talk with SEMO about that. And I said, okay. And then it was kind of like nothing. Crickets, crickets, crickets. And I was like, all right, whatever. So I was hanging out, still doing my thing, still training. And then SEMO came in, and she's like, hey, I understand you want to help with the kids class. And I said, yes, ma'am. You know, I used to do this in California. Mm-hmm. She says, okay, we need you to come to this instructor training meeting. It was called, I think it was called FFIC, like Francis Fong Instructor Conference or something like that. It was just kind of a gathering of all of the instructors at the academy and the assistant instructors, just making sure we're all on the same page, addressing any issues that have come up, answering any questions as far as like how we can teach better, how we can serve our students better.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that we had a sheet of paper. She's like, hey, you know, I want you to write down, you know, what belts you currently hold, what arts those belts are in, how long you've been training, a short-term goal, a five-year goal, and like a long-term goal.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote that down. I wanted to have my own school. So she clears me to help with the kids' class. I do a background check, all that good stuff. And she's like, hey, Sifu and I noticed you want to have your own school one day. I said, yes, ma'am, absolutely. And she's like, well, you know, teaching is just part of it. Like, you need to know the admin stuff. Do you want to start working in the office? And I was like, yes, ma'am, that'd be great. And from there, that's just been my thing. I've been teaching, I've been helping on the teaching staff.
Was,
but yeah, I've been,
that was really cool of her.
Yeah, no, oh, wow. I mean, will forever be grateful to the Fong family, Sifu and Simo both, because I don't know what it was about this, you know, big doofy sea lot nerd that came from California, and they looked at me and went, yeah, this guy's all right. We should get him in here.
No one's going to necessarily argue with him either.
That too. But yeah, like, it's any awareness I have as far as, you know, business marketing, you know, talking to people, having them, you know, building that interest in your arts, you know, having them stick around, you know, building that community, making that family, that welcoming environment. A lot of that stuff, you know, I have the charisma naturally, but it was really sharpened by them. And again, just learning the ins and outs of not just the academy or not just the teaching, but just how to actually run teaching as a business. And I mean, mm-hmm. I think at this point now, you know, I was kind of just getting into it back then. But I know a lot of martial arts instructors who are really talented instructors.
Oh, yeah.
And their schools either, you know, flounder or go out immediately.
A good martial artist does not necessarily make one a good businessman. And it's the same with anything, realistically. Mm-hmm. You know, you can be phenomenal at a thing, you know, be it, you know, painting, you could be a great singer or whatever. Business management is a whole different thing, and I'll be honest with you, it terrifies the hell out of me too,
yeah.
Because it's not really my area of expertise. And there's also, I mean, for me personally, there's a thing about business and the way, you know, obviously some larger companies do, and even some smaller companies do, there's a lot of morality and ethics in there, lines that it seems that certain. And again, this is just kind of the way we conduct business here, and maybe in some other countries and stuff. Doesn't have to be, and that's the hard part for me to balance. Like, there's ethical and moral lines that they seem very easily crossed that I just won't.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say I won't to people that are in business, they're like, well, you won't get people interested in investing in you or whatever because of this. I'm like, okay, but I want to be able to look at myself in the mirror in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, and in the end, it doesn't have to be that way. I don't have to be immoral, and I don't have to be, you know, that's just listening to others, and they aren't necessarily right. But that's the part that terrifies
me. I think one thing that makes it easy on my side is I have the luxury of truly and honestly believing that the opportunity I'm selling, if you want to use that word, is a life-changing positive influence.
Yes. Yeah.
So there's never the thought of, like, you know, if I was selling milkshake machines, I'm like, hey, my milkshake machine is awesome. This guy's other milkshake machine is terrible. You know, you should definitely buy mine. And, you know, how can I, you know, grease the margins?
Did you watch that movie about the McDonald's founder?
Yeah.
That's a good movie.
Yeah. yeah. Yeah,
why is he picking milkshake machine? Wait a second.
Because Michael Keaton is the best.
Yeah,
And this concludes the abbreviated version of the Martial Arts Lifestyle Podcast. Please click the like and subscribe buttons as well as the notification bell. Also consider subscribing to the full-length podcast at www.patreon.com/malmag or purchasing individual full-length episodes at malmag.gumroad.com.
Thank you for listening to this episode with Nick Hahn. Coming up next week, we have a martial artist and master chef, Louis Agoras.
Check out the Malmag store at www.martialartslifestylemagazine.com and click on the store tab. There, you will find a full selection of Timmy B's brand sticks for FMA and Kirby Kerbong, as well as Timmy B's and Dos Manos t-shirts. Many more products coming soon. Also, click on our courses tab to purchase online courses, right now featuring a course in the Dos Manos stick of FMA. More courses to come. This show is produced by Martial Arts Lifestyle Magazine. Visit us at www.martialartslifestylemagazine.com and enjoy the free version of our online magazine with articles, a recommended schools page, and a worldwide events calendar. Music by Jack Al Relic. Martial Arts Lifestyle Magazine and the Martial Arts Lifestyle Podcast are trademarked and copyrighted by TNT LLC.